You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you all had a great weekend. I most certainly did, because Kanawagi Brewing Company dropped the Cryptopsy collab brew. That's right, people. There is a Cryptopsy collab out there. You should absolutely head over to Kanawagi Brewing Company and pick it up. It is aptly called Cryptopsy, and it is a new world pilsner called Pilsner Supremacy. This is a pilsner that has been double dry hopped with Mosaic hops, which is one of my favorite hops. It's absolutely stunning. You got some melon hints to it, but yet it finishes off with a super crisp cereal malty finish. It is absolutely stunning. 4.8%. I strongly suggest you head on over to Kanawagi Brewing Company and pick it up. Very stoked to introduce today's Vox and Hops underrated gem. Today we have an excellent band from right here in Quebec. Their favorite beer is Truth the Elves, Les Quatre Surfeurs de l'Apocalypse. Get ready, people. This is not enough from Upon Your Grave on today's Vox and Hops underrated gem.
Do you smell death? There's something wrong. Not me of that. There's something wrong. Right. Here I'm left alone by my mind. Here I'm left alone by myself. Here I'm wrong to know if it's real. Then I need to know. All my life I search for to see that we're sick.
What a great, great track. What a great band from right here in Quebec, where I am located. I love the bands that come out of Quebec. There's always something different about it, and that is absolutely true about Upon Your Grave. They have some new music, which is coming up in 2021, so keep your eyes on them. If you enjoyed Not Enough, the Upon the Grave track, please check them out via the links, which I have put in the description of this podcast. Today's Vox and Hops episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They normally put on a bunch of amazing shows all year long when there isn't a global pandemic. But not only that, they put on one of North America's sickest metal festivals. And trust me, people, when I say this, it's the absolute truth, because I have played just about every metal fest out there, and Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. I'm super, super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops podcast. On today's episode, I'm super stoked to be with Dan Wyant of Zao. Here it is. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 210.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Dan Wyant of Zao. How you doing, Dan? Let's start with a very, very fun yet complex question. How have you been coping with this beautiful year of 2020?
Been doing all right, I guess, in the grand scheme of everything going on. Doing well. Find the things I can't control or don't have control over and not worry about them. And the things I do, just try to focus and, family and work and things like that. And I'm not necessarily a PMA type of guy, but, just trying to stay positive and make use of the time. Primarily a tattoo artist for a living. And from March until June, I wasn't able to work. In our state, it was we're lumped in with the health and wellness industry, which is like salons and barbers and such. So fortunately, my wife still worked throughout everything. So, like I said, it kind of went through with the attitude that things could have definitely been worse. You know what I mean? Or that type of, I guess that's all you can get through. And it's definitely been interesting, man. I'm 43 and it's like wild to have a year where you're like, man, it's like, I've been alive a while and all kinds of things you'd never expect to happen. And, so in some weird way, it's been kind of really eclectic and interesting, and just it's almost like a surreal, like Twilight Zone episode or something, but I don't know.
I would like it to end sometimes, that's for sure.
Yeah. There's definitely things I miss and such. I guess it's just to keep my head down, work. There's been some weird silver linings with beer where some breweries that I've always, chased after and things like that, started doing like mail delivery, go on the computer and get Other Half and, Equilibrium Brewing delivered to my door for a short period of time. So, look at the bright side. It's been decent on the beer end of things. And, I'm looking forward to, but, at the same time, it's, chaotic. I know if you have kids, we have to homeschool half the week and everyone's still working, and that can get pretty, stressful and such. But it's happy to have a minute to hang out and have a beer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What beer do you have on your side there, Dan?
Actually brought a couple just in case. Didn't want to have to get up again. There's a local brewery in Pittsburgh called Cinderlands, and they did a collaboration with a brewery called Hop Butcher. They're up in the Chicago general area. It's the abbreviations of the states you drive through. So it's Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, PA.
That's cool.
And it's just an awesome, just a double hazy IPA. Hits all the marks, super soft, a little bit of kind of like pine resin presence, and then it has that nice kind of rounded like pineapple peach flavor, you know, so everything good, man. It's a kind of nice light straw color.
Gorgeous. I have a Third Moon Brewing Company.
Oh, nice.
Out of Milton, Ontario. They are a young brewery, but they are just making the sickest metal-themed brews. I love it. It's something that is still in the infancy stages up here in Canada, having metal-themed breweries. And Third Moon is up there with the best of them. This is Tranquility, a double IPA, 8.3%. Let me crack this open. Shout out to Nathan, who made sure that I got this in my hands, which I really appreciate. Let's just dance into your craft beer journey as I pour this out. Tell me about... Let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about that first beer. Do you remember your first beer, Dan?
Yeah, well, I got into craft beer weird way, but then I remember one of the first ones that really blew me away. I used to, the town I lived in, Greensburg, in my like mid-20s, going into my early 30s. Yeah, that looks good. I like that glass too, sir. It's very nice.
Yes, sir. Cheers.
Cheers. And there was a really cool bar called Red Star by my house, and it was kind of like they had some bar food and some fancy food, and it was the first place in the early 2000s that we would go there just to hang out, and the only beer they served there was beer they made. So you had about 8 choices, and it was a while back, and that wasn't really something you saw much, and honestly, I went there, and I was at the time I drank mixed drinks if I would go out, and then so I started to get intrigued. And actually, one of the first beers I had that impressed me was a black IPA. I just thought it was such a wild. I'd had, like, you know, all these different things, and craft beer was still young. We used to get, like, Victory and Trogues and things like that around here. And then, I started getting into it just from that, you know, trying different beers. And the guy that was brewing those, he was very, there was a lot of, like, more, like, European traditional. You know, he did a lot of, like Dunkels and, you know what I mean, proper lagers and things and such. But, so that was like, my first thing into craft beer, going into a place with saying like, hey, we only make, you know, our serve beer that we make here. And, they made this like super strong barley wine every Christmas. And then that was just like, it got me into it enough to like say like, hey, there's like beer out there that's not just, the same old thing. And then, met a couple friends, you know what I mean? You know, here and there, they'd go, friends that would go out to Philadelphia and New York City and places, and they would come back and have a beer. Like, I mean, bring back a Heady Topper or something like that. And, but one of the first, when I knew I was hooked, man, is it was 2016. It was right around New Year's. And my friend came back. He was like, I got a beer from this place called Trillium. And it was in a big glass bottle. And it was a Congress Street. And he was like, wait till you see when you pour it out, you can't even see through it. And, you know what I mean? And I remember we drank that. That was the first like proper kind of like unfiltered hazy beer I'd ever had. And ever since then, man, I've just been chasing the, you know what I mean? The next best one, I guess. But, I get, you know, all the lead ups, like having like Pliny, Heady Topper, all the kind of like before the haze kind of or New England thing hit, you know, just the kind of like West Coast, the resinous beers and, yeah, and then it took me a while, but I really like everything now, you know. Actually, one of the other beers I poured out just to sip on was, Anchorage Brewing did their 10 Year. It's actually a cool label.
Very cool. Oh, yeah.
It's just called 10 Years, but it's actually a cuvee of bourbon barrel-aged stouts and barley wines. And then they conditioned it on coconut, vanilla beans, cinnamon, and cocoa nibs. So it's... something to sip on the side, you know.
But he's going back and forth. I love it.
Yeah, but usually if I have a couple beers at home, I'll open maybe like a stout in a small glass and drink an IPA, and occasionally, you know what I mean.
That's interesting. That's an interesting idea, like a palate switcher upper. That's very interesting.
And just to I just enjoy. It took me a while to come around on like bigger stouts and wild ales, but. Eventually, just really liked everything, you know. And the beer scenes got awesome around here. Pittsburgh was really rough even 5-6 years ago. It wasn't a lot of, you know, anything too crazy going on locally. We had poor distribution in the sense of, like, not a lot of stuff landed here to pass us up for Philly or going the other way, Cleveland or something. And we started getting some decent breweries, and you know, we're starting to get good beers in, and now mail order, and getting order tired hands and all this stuff to your door. It's great, you know?
It's I wish it would happen up here in Quebec, at least. It's illegal still. The archaic beer laws are just killing the breweries up here, especially the small ones that don't have good distribution. So I'm rallying for it, and there's petitions, and I'm signing everyone. This is delicious. It has a dank, hoppy bite. It's slightly creamy. You don't feel the 8.3%, which is always a dangerous, fun thing. And it's amazing. I love it. Third Moon Brewing Company. Amazing. Let's dance into the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardian's house, what music was playing when you were not in control, Dan? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
It's nothing that crazy. My dad was always... my parents split up when I was young, and I was man with my mom. My dad was a classic rock guy, kind of through and through. He was at Woodstock and things like that, you know? So he was kind of into, you know, the kind of core 60s, 70s stuff, you know? Anything, you know, from the Doors to Meatloaf to, you know, what have you. And actually, when I was young living with my mom, we actually shared a house with my uncles for a long time, and they were in their early 20s, and they would just play like 80s music, and you know, at the time it was the 80s though, so just like what was on the radio. And it wasn't, you know, and it was a station called B94 actually, and I still have a weird kind of whatever for some of that stuff. It's just like good memories, or you know, whatever, childhood. But in my when I was about 11 or 12, as when I started to make friends and meet people that started to introduce me. So I was fortunate to very young be introduced to a lot of pretty wild stuff. You know what I mean? I remember being 10 or 11, introduced to like Venom and things like that. You know what I mean? By a friend's brother. And then, just that I was a skateboarder and, started meeting kids out skating and, you know, did you ever hear Napalm Death? Did you ever hear this? Or, Sore Throat. I don't know if you ever heard of those guys. They were a...
No.
I believe they were from the UK. They were kind of like an old... it's like grind where it was... I remember my buddy had the record. It was like 100 songs on one LP type of deal. You know, like a 13-second type of... The lyrics were the title of the song type of deal. You know? It was like, oh, what's this song called? And it'd be like, whatever. You know, what are lyrics? Oh, it's the exact... It's just the title. They have enough time to say the title. Which is... There's nothing wrong with that. But... yeah, it was a mix of, I got into a lot of that early, and fortunate, a lot of punk rock too. Pittsburgh was, more so in like the late 80s, I guess early 90s would have, it seemed to be a lot more of a, like a punk rock city, you know, as far as shows and stuff went. And got to see some like pretty cool bands pretty young. I actually saw, there was a local band called Eviction, and I went to see them once. I was trying to think. I was in probably fifth or sixth grade, and one of the bands came through and played with them was actually Pantera. They hadn't put out Cowboys from Hell yet, and they just like played this like weird little. They still were in that like transitioning out of the metal phase a little bit. So I got to see like a weird just Pantera show when I was still in like middle school. We mainly went to see this band Eviction. They were a really popular punk Pittsburgh punk rock band back at the time. And there was a lot of cool like venues around here where you could go underage, and you know, everything was underage. 13, 14, able to go see GBH and, you know, Subhumans and just weird stuff like that. And primarily because that's what was coming around the most. And then when I joined Zao and we started touring, it wasn't until then where I really started seeing a lot of, like, you know, bigger metal acts and things like that. So, but yeah, I know that was kind of a vague answer to your question, but I guess the true soundtrack wasn't that interesting. It was just radio, you know, whatever's on the radio, kind of pop radio at the time. And then that's not that exciting, I guess. But yeah, at a young age, I was introduced. And then my mom met a guy, and he had a son from a previous marriage. He played guitar, was into like a Merciful Fate and things like that. So I was fortunate to, even though it wasn't like what my parents were listening to, was introduced to a lot of cool stuff at a, you know, young age, and was able to get my hands on it, and had friends that listened to it and make you tapes and stuff, mixtapes back in the day.
That's amazing. Yeah. You stemmed a lot of questions from that one answer, and I love it. First off, Meatloaf is metal as hell, and I love them. Those album artworks are still fucking cool.
Yeah, now that's when I'm a tattooer. And when I think back, it's like I remember being enamored by the Bat Out of Hell cover, just being like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I guess that's always one of the coolest things about actual vinyl, too, was getting to see those awesome, that awesome artwork and designs, like, really big and see the more intricate details and things like that.
Which is the way they're supposed to be experienced, because looking at it, especially nowadays, looking at it on your phone, there's no justice to the artwork in it whatsoever.
Yeah. What was it, last year, I think, or the year before, was the first year in history that vinyl outsold CDs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I guess no one buys CDs anymore. It's really not that. It's like, you know, like physical. It's like
Yeah. I get them on the road all the time, and I'm like, I have no way to listen to this at my house anymore. So.
Yeah, or back when I got them, you bring them home, burn them, and then put them away. And it, you know what I mean? It was like the actual physical CD went into a Tupperware or something.
Exactly. And then you stemmed, as you said, that you listened to the music of the 80s, which was the music of the time. And even now when we think back to it, we all think back to the music of the 80s as basically the same 10 songs. We all name a song and it will have that emotional resurgence that comes out. And I was wondering if in the future, for our kids, when they hit, are they going to say, you know, oh yeah, the 2010s, you know, it's not going to be the same soundtrack. That's something that's a loss because of the vast expanse of music that's out there now. We're not all being, you know, pummeled is the wrong word, with the same soundtrack anymore. It's different for everyone. So I wonder what that's going to be like in the future, if there will be even any like key songs as there are now, you know, for us, for the 80s.
My daughter is a little bit more of a radio person, where, you know, she's kind of more, she likes everything, but she, when we get in the car, she's kind of like whatever the popular stuff is. She's a little older, hangs out with her friends, and I think some of them listen to it, and it's whatever. But my son is, when they were little, I would try not to necessarily say listen to this or listen to that. I would just play like weird varieties of music and see if they would latch on to things. And he really is into he really latched on to like bands like Sleep and like Electric Wizard. He likes for some reason he really enjoys like that kind of more like slow, heavy, kind of like Sabbath-y,
awesome,
riffage type stuff. And trying to think what else. See, Wolf Mother, for some reason, there was a video game he had and had a Wolf Mother song in the beginning, and then he's like, what's this? And we found out now he wants to. So he's kind of into the fuzz rock, the doom, stoner sludge stuff, I guess, a little bit. But and he's not as into the radio stuff, so I'd be curious to see, you know, kind of whatever. And he used to like real heavy stuff when he was young because he thought the Hulk sang, you know, like anything with like really like aggressive vocals. He was like, not the Hulk, yeah, sure. And he's like, yeah, put it on again. Like, all right, you know what I mean?
My son is really into, I haven't said this on the podcast yet, I don't think, is really, really, really into Du Hast from Rammstein. That's his track. To the point where I was putting him to bed the other night, and he was upset that he was with me and not with his mother, and I put on Du Hast, and he stopped crying and fell asleep. Which is
that's awesome. He's a German industrial taste.
I think it's hilarious.
that's awesome.
Take me to your first time on stage. Do you remember the first time you performed?
I'm trying to think. Man, some of that stuff's... I remember the first Zayo show I played. It was just at a fire hall. It was nerve-wracking. I had kind of came in. I'm trying to think, the very first show I ever played in, like, bands before that. I was always playing bass and stuff prior to that.
Was that terrifying, stepping out from behind the bass?
A little bit. Well, the scary thing about when I started in Zayo is they were established at the time. They had been a band for a while. And we had met them through, the scene wasn't as big back then, so we met them more through, like, we were one of those, like, local bands willing to open in, like, a three-hour radius. Like, oh, you're playing here, you need someone to open, we'll drive out there and open for you, or, you know, anything like that. And then they had a few records out. They put out their first bigger record, and then after one of their first big tours, things kind of fell apart, and the drummer restructured. So they just come off this, like, new release and all these things, and then I got involved, and now it's kind of like, all right, I hope you're as good as the guy, you know, before you that just recorded this record and, you know, all this stuff. And it was a lot of pressure in that sense, but it's hard to explain, but even in this band, other bands, when I'm able to play, I'm able to kind of like go somewhere else a little bit. You know what I mean? I can't explain it, where I get up and I'm nervous and I'm like, I'm going to step out for a little bit. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like it happens. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Your reptilian brain takes over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just got to attack.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And it's kind of just open the doors and let it happen. You know what I mean? And
Were you ready that first show? I know for my first Cryptopsy show, I was barely ready. So were you ready?
Probably. Probably not. You know what I mean? I practiced up and stuff, but I don't think you're ready. You know what I mean? It's hard because at first, you know, if you're practiced up, you're more mechanical and just trying to do a good job versus like feeling it and being in there. So I feel like it's more that type of thing. You're kind of just like this, you know, the eggshell kind of mechanical approach at first, just being like, I just want to get up there and like remember lyrics and like sound okay. And it's not till later where you can kind of
enjoy yourself.
And have fun and like play music as opposed to just like some kind of like nerve wracking, you know, public experiment. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. It was good. It went over well. It was weird because I had a totally different vocal style from the guy behind me, or, you know, before me. Let's say ahead of me, but in the sense of, like, he was more of, like, he had more of a traditional kind of, like, hardcore voice, I guess, and he had a lot of sustain. He could really, like, hit a note in, like, I mean, like, 20, 30 seconds, just, like, with power and whatever the whole time, and you're, like, sitting there, like, whatever. And I was more, I was more influenced through, what's weird is I always got like a lot of like, people assume like it was kind of like patterning after like Carcass and things like that, but it was actually, I don't know if you remember, there was a band from the UK in like the early 90s, they were called Iron Monkey. They were a, just like a super ahead of their time sludge outfit, you know what I mean? Just like pummeling, kind of like, brutal, like, I mean, it fits more in that like kind of like a doom stoner stuff, and the singer just had this like ripping, just shredding high pitched voice. Not quite black, like in the kind of realm of black metal, but with a lot more like kind of like a little oomph behind it, like power. His name is John Palmaro. He's one of my always been one of my favorites, and that was one of my big approaches coming up, and there were some local bands that had singers that had like a similar approach. And so not only was I filling this guy's shoes, but my vocal style was like 180. You know what I mean? So it was like, well, not only did I hope they like me, but I hope they like a pretty much completely different delivery, you know, of these vocals. And, you know, there were definitely people, I'm sure, that weren't into it, but, you know, overall it went well, and, you know, it was kind of a, you know, ended up, I guess people liked it or whatever, or accepted it at some point. You know, I don't know.
You're still there, Dan. So everything's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about vocals in general. Do you remember when you started screaming, why you started screaming? Take me through to discovering harsh vocals.
There was just certain vocals I was drawn to. Like I said, there were some local bands I really liked. There was a really cool big local scene around here when I was like in high school and finishing up high school. I went to a technical school, which meant like I went to high school for half a day, you know, and then the other half a day I went to a trade school for graphic arts, design. And I believe, 8 school districts together. So what was cool is you went in and you would meet guys from all over, like different, you know, the county. And I met some friends, and they're like, hey, we have friends that are in bands. You know, if you want to hang out one weekend, we'll go check them out. And then started seeing there was like a little bit of a hardcore metal scene, industrial, really weird. It was a lot of mixed stuff back then. You'd go to a show, and there'd be like an indie rock band and a death metal band. And you know what I mean? It was
just so they could play, you know, that they got to sell enough tickets, basically, yeah.
Yeah, and I was always in, like I said, that same style of vocal. There was a few local bands. There was a band called Passover, and then up north there was Abnegation, and then I'm trying to remember Shadows Fall.
Overcast it was.
Yes. So it was all that kind of stuff, and at the time I was just playing bass, and you know, it's one of those things where I was playing bass in kind of a, I guess like metalcore type band, and with Russ, who ended up being in Zao, and then Steve, the drummer, who for way down the road for a brief period of time was too, but It's one of those things where, you know, at the shows I started saying, you know, you want a mic? You know, they'll usually ask, like, guitar player, you want a mic? And I'd say, yeah, you know what? And I just started, like, testing it out little bits at a time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just doing little backups. And then just over time, I got comfortable and I started doing it more and more. And then when we record, I would, you know, do a lot of backup vocals. And then that's kind of how I got my chance to try out. You know, they're like, hey, I like your backup vocals and things like that. And then went to just doing, you know, just vocals. And Zaya was the first band I was ever in where I did just vocals. I never was, you know, just sang in a band before that. So, Yeah, it was crazy, man. It was one of those just like everything happened fast and you're just happy for opportunities. So you try your best and, you know.
Yeah, you always got to try and you never know what's going to happen if you don't put yourself out there. So,
yeah. And I guess it paid off and, you know, still there were some ups and downs, but still doing it today. You know, as much as you can today, I guess. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, you guys were coming back and the world just said, no, you're not.
Yeah, we actually had a new record done and we just were sitting on it. Just going to kind of wait until maybe next year when, not even necessarily when you can tour, but just kind of hopefully things start to breathe a little bit, you know, and you can. So it's kind of, we're all really excited about it. So it's kind of sitting on it a little bit, you know, what have you. And we had some really cool shows. We don't tour a lot. It's primarily my kind of, it's on me a little bit, but with the family and stuff, it's hard for me to go away for long periods of time. Because of schedule stuff with my wife, but we had some cool stuff lined up this summer. And, you know, that's probably the biggest bummer of everything is not being able to see or play music.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't know. I'm really curious to see what happens, you know. A lot of small venues, the type of venues that we usually would play, seem to be kind of just slowly. Yeah. They're
closing up,
you know. It seems like the theme of all this is like a lot of the kind of big corporate stuff is going to make it because there's backing. And then a lot of the little things are kind of shriveling up and, you know what I mean, kind of going away, whether it's a restaurant or a venue or what have you. So I'm curious to see where, when this is all over, you know, where the, you know, bands like at our caliber can even get out and play, you know.
That's true. That's very true. That's sad. That's true. And that's why Daniel DeFonce, who was booking Devastation on the Nation, he was one of the first people to postpone when Trump canceled all international flights back in March. And now he, again, is one of the first people to just say, no, I'm not postponing it again. I'm canceling it. And we'll book it if we can in the future, because who knows if any of these venues that I've booked or reserved is even going to still exist. So another wise decision by Dan DeFonce, who I love.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we were supposed to maybe drive down to play this festival, and I was talking to our drummer Jeff the other day, and supposedly to make it worthwhile, we were going to hit some play some shows on the way down. And I could be, I hope I'm not mistaken, but I believe he said that like the routing we had to get down there, that most of those venues are closed now. So if we would try to do the same thing, like say in the summer, there's a chance, you know what I mean? That's like physically not possible to run that route again. You know what I mean? Which is like, for us is what makes everything able to do. We try to always sneak in, you know, extra shows and stuff just to make ends meet. And, you know, you're not trying to necessarily make, we used to call it, you're not trying to make like money outside of just the money you would need to, whether fill the void in the taking time off your, day job or you know what I mean, or just to cover your bills and stuff. So, you know, it makes it hard sometimes to go out and just take a hit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy because I guess that's what's wild about right now is the uncertainty of everything, you know, and I guess it's unprecedented in a sense. I feel like things like this have generally happened before, you know what I mean, in the sense of, pandemics and things like that. What was it, 1918 with the Spanish flu and all that, similar, kind of general similarities in the sense of masks and social distancing and things being shut down. But I'm sure it'll happen again, too. But, you know, in this time and with what we have, this is the, you know, I don't think really a lot of it's no one really knows what to do.
our generation, it's just so new. and scary, and uncertainty is scary, but we have to remain positive, and hopefully, you know, it's history is not going to completely repeat itself and have prohibition coming up next, because that would make me very upset.
Yeah.
You mentioned a new record. You guys are independent. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, we do. We have our own label. In the sense of we just use our own label to operate as ourselves.
Let's talk about that. Let's say the whole idea, because Cryptopsy was independent since 2012, and subsequently just this year we signed to a label. Let's talk about being independent and making that decision to go independent.
Well, it was one of our big things is we weren't able to tour a ton, and we felt bad because almost any label you get involved with obviously expects you to get out there a certain amount. So the first decisions of this were... you know, to be able to not be under any sort of pressure to, you know what I mean, fulfill anything. And so the label's called Observed Observer. Like I said, we don't sign other bands. We just put out our own content. And we try really hard to do everything, like, ahead of time. Like, so when we would tour, play shows, or when we sell prior releases or merchandise like T-shirts, we tend to not even give ourselves a lot, but put everything towards the next project. And it keeps everything self-funding. And we... you know, we also run unanimously, so we don't actually make any, we don't do anything even if one member doesn't want to do it. So,
wow, okay, cool.
You know, we were able to kind of operate like that, so to do a new record. And our drummer, Jeff, is the real driving force behind everything as far as he's very business minded in the sense where he does a lot of the red tape stuff and, you know, and dealing with everything from dealing with like the pressing plants and so on and so forth. And, but it's good, and it's not anyone's main income, so it's also we're in a little different, you know what I mean, thing with that, where it's more like it just enables us to operate freely. It's not a big source of income per se, but it allows us to at least do the artistic side of it, you know, writing and recording and putting out content with you know what I mean, without like having to fund it personally. And you know, doing okay, and then we're kind of partners with this place called Holy Mountain. They're a printing place, and Danny's awesome. He's the guy that runs it, and we kind of they help us out, and you know, when we put out a record, we kind of put it out. They do a lot of the shipping, and
which is the shittiest part. So
yeah, they do the warehousing and the shipping, and you know what I mean, and all that, and then we put their a logo on our stuff, and they're great, and we're proud to, you know, kind of represent them, or, you know, be in this with them, in the sense of they, you know, we, you know, get all our merch exclusively through them, and they do awesome work as far as screen printing and stuff. But Danny's even just personally, and it's like, it's rare actually, like, you know, it's cool to like text back and forth with him about, he's into certain things like, you know, comics and, anime and stuff. It's cool. It's just like he's like a cool guy, and so that's a big part of it too, because that allows us to, you know, gives us a platform to, you know, not only get, you know, merchandise made, but to like warehouse it and ship it and everything like that. And so it's all these like weird little things that enable us to kind of do it kind of like low key and fun. But it's something I, you know, it takes up a good chunk of my week, whether you're recording or writing or dealing with something or this or that. So it's a lot. We just don't get out and play a ton, and we've been trying to record and put out a lot of content more, you know, to make up for not being able to tour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That must have been frustrating when you guys operate unanimously. So it must have been difficult deciding to shelve this record, because a record is a baby. It's something that you've worked on very hard, and you want to share it with the fans, share it with the world, get it out there. So it must have been a difficult band meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it was, but, you know, we didn't want to, there was like some other, like, we try not to release stuff, and there's other big releases. We don't have a ton of money for advertising, so, mm-hmm. you know, if there's a lot of stuff coming out, we necessarily can't compete with that. So we usually wait for holes, and we were figuring, there's a couple other releases from bands in, like, certain genres that were coming out that were big, and then we also always screw ourselves, and this is weird, but, you know, it's like if you release a record too close to the end of the year,
yeah,
you can never get on any of the album, like, not album of the year, but you can never get on any of the good, like, reviewed up stuff. So it's like, we're not going to release something in December again and then get, you know what I mean? You almost get, like, everyone's already wrote their lists. And I'm not saying we make that, but, like, even just little stuff like that. You know, it's like, oh, wait till next year. And I would think maybe when, I don't know, when all this wraps up, I would imagine there's going to be a ton of releases coming out. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are sitting around writing. And
exactly. It's going to be hell for record labels to schedule all this coming out. I want to talk a little bit more about craft beer. Has Zao ever made a beer collab?
Yeah, we've done, well, we did one with our friend Pete from Against the Grain Brewing. They're in Louisville, Kentucky. We had a record come out, and the one on Tentern Virus, and there was a, we ended up doing a beer called Burned at the Stake, and it was like a smoked kind of pepper stout, sweet stout.
Very cool.
And it didn't get, it's kind of hard to explain, it didn't get officially bottled, but it came out in kegs, and we had like a release. And then we actually, we didn't make a big announcement yet, but we have another, we have a sour beer coming out with a brewery in Michigan. As soon as we can get some dates, we're going to announce that. But yeah, no, I love, it's like, it's awesome to be able to do beer collaborations. And do you guys have any? I didn't know if you...
Cryptopsy does. It's actually coming out very, very soon. It's not announced yet. I've done like something. I've gone live with the brewer on Instagram. Maybe by the time this is out, it's been announced and it's happening. It's with Kanawagi Brewing Company here in Montreal. And it is called Cryptopsy. And it is a New World Pilsner called Pilsner Supremacy.
Nice.
So it's a double dry hop Pilsner. And mono mosaic hops. I'm stoked to taste it. The can art is a reimagining of the Whisper Supremacy artwork, hence the Pilsner Supremacy. I'm stoked about it. I can't wait to try it.
And that was my introduction album back in the day too. So you know what I mean. Well, it's a Cryptopsy. You know what I mean? Like my first like Cryptopsy introduction was Whisper Supremacy. We had a guy he had a label called Willow Tip. He had signed some local bands. I believe Creationist Crucifixion did some stuff with him, and there was a local band called Circle of Dead Children.
Yeah.
But he used to come with us and do merch. And remember when people had distros? He'd come and do merch and have a distro. But he was the first person that, you know, he'd come to your house and be like, did you ever hear this?
You know what I mean?
But yeah, that was the first. Whisper Supremacy was my first introduction, which was awesome. I was very excited when my friend David mentioned this. I was like, he's like, would you want to do this? I'm like, of course. That's like, you know what I mean?
Amazing. Shout out to David Lay for hooking up this interview.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've known him for a very long time. He's always been around. But yeah, I know this other beer. It should be cool. I actually am kind of at a standstill because I don't know what I'm supposed to say or not say about it.
I understand. No worries whatsoever.
We actually did it quite a while ago. What's nice is it's a proper wild ale, so it'll continue to condition, so it's not going flat or anything like that.
It's just the yeast is making it better and better.
But what was cool is a couple of the guys in Zao enjoy beer. Jeff, the drummer, I would say would second to me, is probably the most into stuff. And then Scott, and then Marty and Russ. Russ is more of like a actually wine drinker and so on and so forth. But it was really cool. This I do beer labels. It's one of the other things I do for a brewery back here called Insurrection Ale Works. I do all their can art and label art and things like that. And the brewer there messaged me one day and said, hey, I got a brewer friend I met at... a festival. He's interested in you guys. Would like to maybe do a beer collab. So we made some time on a run to stop by, and we got there, and he had probably like 20 some samples for each of us out, you know, like little like half ounce pours. And the craziest part is some of the guys are into beer, some aren't, but he said, you know, pick your five favorite and we'll go from there. And we all picked the same five. It was crazy. Yeah. So it's a golden sour. It has a tiny bit of gin barrel, some cherry, a little bit of vanilla, a couple other things. It's a nice, it's something that's not so crazy that maybe someone that's not real into beer would, you know, be kind of like off-put by. But I also feel like it's someone that, as in, you know, that likes wild ales especially, would enjoy the subtleties of the flavors. But it came out really good, and I'm excited. I've kind of been sitting on it, you know,
same thing. Cool.
As soon as we're able to announce some stuff, it's kind of and not on purpose, it kind of coincides with one of the singles we might release, you know, when we're able to get something out there. So we're probably going to try to, like, you know, kind of have a multiple, you know, release a single, kind of announce the beer, try to have everyone benefit. And but yeah, what's your like? What's your favorite styles? I've listened to some of the shows, but as far as I know, because I have, you know, I like everything.
I'm right there with you. I love them all. I really, really enjoy the Crispy Boys, the resurgence of the Pilsners and Lagers, the Kolsch's. Montreal's really getting really hot for that right now. I also enjoy the Smoothie Sours, which is like all the rage from this place up here, Pub Brewski.
They make
killer Smoothie Sours, which is basically fruit puree.
That's the other beer you have? Yeah.
Mixed with a kettle sour beer. Delicious. And then I love, of course, you know, the Hazy Boys.
Yeah.
Just killing it up here. Finally, we were a little bit late up here in Montreal getting on the haze craze. We liked it, but it took a long time for brewers to finally start nailing it. But now everyone is on track. And then, of course, the big stouts. I feel like our sour game is not there yet. There's nobody that's really nailing those complex wild ale sours yet. There's a few places. I'll give a shout out to Avant-Garde Brasserie Artisanale that has nailed that, but I would like to see more in the style that's coming out in the States that's really just much more complex and like exactly like that beer that you were describing before.
But do you guys get, from what I understand, because I had a friend that used to go back and forth, do you guys see like distribution of things like Canteon and things like that up there at all?
There's imports that come through, but it comes through our liquor store, and there's private import people that bring them in, and then they announce them and sell them in the liquor store. But you can't just get them. It's very, very difficult. And when you do get them, they're hit or miss, depending on how long they've been in a boat coming across the ocean.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I like... You know, haze. It's crazy because when I first got into beer, and I liked IPAs from the very beginning, and there was this part of me that was like, I wish, you know, some of the astringent kind of alcohol bite would go down, maybe a tiny bit of the bitterness. I don't always dislike bitterness, but like sometimes that bitterness mixed with like a, you know, like a higher ABV West Coast, and you almost get like that like that astringent alcohol, mm-hmm. like actually like rubbing alcohol almost type of flavor. So it's always like, you know what, I wish like you could get rid of a little bit of that astringency and kind of like bitterness and maybe replace it with some softness and more hop presence. And then yeah, when I had that first Trillium, I'm like this is what I've always kind of in my head pictured. So I've been on board with all the hazy stuff since the beginning. Right when I got into it, there was one of the first places around here was called the Brew Gentleman. We're making some fantastic ones. And then I have a lot of friends that now, even that'll run out, you know, they'll be like, I'm going to drive 4 hours and grab a couple cases and drive back, and they'll go, you know, somewhere and grab some good stuff. And so, yeah, I love the fruity, like the fruit smoothie stuff too. There's a place in outside of Philly called Imprint. And then, but one of my new favorite places, they're called, messaged them today on the correct pronunciation because I wasn't sure, but they're called Mortalis.
I've definitely heard that name, yeah.
But they have these hydras.
Yes.
This is raspberry, blackberry, strawberry, marshmallow, walnut, maple.
Fuck. And, yes. And I've heard that they are it's the number one smoothie.
They're great.
Am I right?
Yeah. And what I'll say is like with hazy beers and like pastry stouts and things, like I feel like sometimes they get a bad rap because people act like, you know, if you put fruit or, you know, like, you know, a stout, you know, like a vanilla or marshmallows or, you know, hazy beers, like that it's just easy. And I'm like, well, I've had a lot of terrible beers in that style. You know what I mean? I've had bad stouts with a million things in it. And, you know, so it's like when you get a good one that nails it, it's, you know, I don't think it's whatever, but I appreciate it. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. That comes back to the law of purity mentality and the old school brewers that are just being obfuscated with the new creative angles. Where beer is becoming closer to cooking, you know what I mean? Like, as opposed to just following the law with the same three ingredients and then changing it. So it's, people are getting very, I mean, up here in Montreal, the haze craze made the old school brewers very upset.
No, it's the same here. And I think the other thing that kind of the other part about that stings is they sell like crazy. I mean, that's
exactly
as a brewery trying to make money off of consumers, you have to I'm not saying I know this, you know, I know of breweries that I was told a story about, you know, there's the popular brewery Monkish out on the West Coast that, you know, they were Monkish. They were like a sour Belgian brewery, and they really never did the hazy stuff. And, you know, they started doing it, and, you know, blew up and allowed them to do everything, you know, they wanted to. And I feel like, you know, anymore, it's like, that's, you know, if you want to make them and you make them well, that's where the money is. And then you can do the things you wanted to do, you know,
exactly.
Not on the side. And Monkish sours were fantastic. I was fortunate to go there once, and I had a couple hazy beers, and then I actually, their sours were probably even more impressive. You know what I mean? So it was really cool to be like, to get to try that. But no, it makes a, the other thing I noticed is all the brewers I know, they all drink like, just like lagers. You know what I mean? You'll go hang out and they have all access to all these crazy beers, and not only that they made, but the things you would like pick up from, you know, like, hey man, here's a bottle of this, try this or whatever. And a lot of those guys I know, they're...
The simple beer, the pleasures of beer, just those three ingredients. And there's an art to it, and they do appreciate it. And I, as you were mentioning, that people are, have to make haze so that they can pay for their personal pet projects. It makes me think of if we were artists and we went out and we started recording pop songs to pay for our projects, how we would feel about that. So I can understand how these old school brewers get frustrated.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is I used to, there was an old cartoon on Liquid Television on MTV, and they made it into a movie that wasn't very good, but Aeon Flux. It was an old cartoon, started on Liquid TV and had a couple seasons. It's one of my favorite. The movie wasn't very good. I kind of knew that the second they announced they were going to make a movie of it. But what's crazy is Peter Chung, the animator that did Aeon Flux, he made all his money by doing Rugrats, the kids show on Nickelodeon. So, what I mean?
Exactly. It's just like that.
And hey, there's a, you know, if you're a brewer and you got to do this one thing to make it, it's better than having to do some other outside 9-to-5 mundane thing. You know, like, I'd rather draw a kid's cartoon to fund my cool cartoons than, you know what I mean, go do, I don't know, Big Bitches or something. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
At least you're still, you know, if you're writing pop songs, like, at least I'm in a studio, and you know what I mean? Like,
I wanted to talk about you being an artist and being a tattoo artist. I didn't know you designed beer labels, so that's very, very cool. Take me to you being young. Were you always someone that drew? Is it something that was just something that happened to you? Like, you picked out up a pair of something in your hand and you started making stuff right away?
I always, from as long as I could, like to draw, and I tried my best. And I think the biggest pushes for the things that made me want to draw and like, create art was record covers and posters. You know, whether it be like even when I was young and into Iron Maiden, I mean, I always thought that was the coolest thing that they, I'm drawing a blank on his name, which I'm embarrassed, but, you know, like all the different Eddies, like whether it's like Power Slave or Aces High, I always thought it was cool that there was this character and this like amazing art. And then skateboard art as well, and comics. And I just kept pushing, and I didn't actually take much interest in tattoos until the drummer Zayo, and he was the first person I know that had like really nice kind of like custom stuff. And I was kind of like, I've never seen tattoos like that before. And I actually did art my whole life. And around the time I joined the band, I had gotten really discouraged. I kind of had this like fire in my youth of like getting older and getting involved with a skateboard company or doing art for something like that. And I got to that like 18 or 19. And it was just like, you know, and it's not like it is today, I guess, where you have like social media and there's all these outlets and ways to meet people. And I just kind of hit this wall and was like, I don't have any outlets. I don't know what I would do. And I kind of like put my pencils down and stuff for a while. And it wasn't until I met Jesse and then started going to some tattoo shops, and that art kind of like, some of it reminded me of like the art that inspired me in my past. And that's where I kind of like found my, I guess, you know, drive again to create like, you know, visual arts. And then I was fortunate to, early on, a guy that I was getting a lot of work from ended up apprenticing me, and I got my foot in the door and was lucky to get some good shops out in the general area where I live, and was able to kind of like learn and grow. But yeah, it all goes back to, you know, it all kind of comes full circle with like music and album art and, you know, tattoos and all that stuff. And it's pretty cool. I'm thankful that kind of just didn't, if that never would have happened, I don't know, might have never picked a pencil up again, who knows. Or
it's crazy. Hey, life is beautiful. Every decision, it guides us somewhere. So we always have to, you know, just take that chance. You never know. You never, never know. Had you not said, yeah, throw that mic up, I'm going to scream backups.
Yeah.
Those early shows, you know, you would have never gotten there at all. It's amazing. I love
it. And that's the one thing I've always tried to put myself out there, any opportunity I got. Like, I have actually pretty bad anxiety, too. So even little things, I get, you know, whatever, and I still just, I'll agree and then see it through. You know what I mean? Even things like this, not that it's anything, whatever, but I'm always worried, like, you know, I'm sure everybody's worried about sounding, saying something stupid or sounding, you know, listening back and being like, what am I talking about? Or sounding redundant. I sometimes have trouble. As soon as I go to recall something, it's like I'll get this like anxious shutdown, like a name. Like, oh yeah, my best friend growing up, his name was.
Yeah.
You know,
and then you're gonna finish this, and you're gonna be like, the artist that did Iron Maiden is blah 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 blah.
Yeah. Or it's like my favorite singer was that guy in that band, whatever. His name was. You know, and you're like,
yes.
I guess, and a few people are like, oh, your favorite singer, huh? Can't even remember his name. What have you, but
that's amazing.
But yeah, hopefully if we ever make it up there, if I can get some stuff up with me, I'll bring you some.
Same.
You know what I mean?
Same.
Whatever. Do you guys, are you able to get anything up there? Like any of the mail order stuff at all or no?
No, completely illegal. And there is, of course, the whole illicit beer trade system that goes on clandestinely, which is illegal, people. I don't suggest you do it because it is illegal, but it happens. Let's wrap this up with one last question, a classic wrap-up question at this point. What is your hangover cure? It probably doesn't happen because you have young kids, you're in control, but every once in a while, we have one too many.
Usually, sounds weird, but I find like trying to find one way or another to sweat it out a little bit, which is whether crank the shower up hot and sit in the bathroom, you know what I mean? And then anything with raw ginger in it, what I mean? Like I found when I was on our honeymoon, we were in Hawaii, and I was able to buy this just like straight ginger drink. But the closest thing I can find back here is it's actually a kombucha. It's like this thick with ginger kombucha, and I feel like if I can wake up, and even if I don't eat much, in the summer or something, if I can do a little bit of yard work or something, sweat it out, have some ginger. It seems to be sweat some of the toxins out and replace it with some ginger. Feels really good on the stomach. And, it's crazy, man. Anymore, I hit a wall. I'm not saying I don't have too much every once in a while, but one nice thing about heavy craft beer is sometimes when you get to that point where maybe you're taking on too much, where you're really going to whatever, it's almost like I'm going to shut my eyes for a minute or something before I can get too, you know, into trouble. But
it's amazing. You have a self-defense mechanism. I love it.
Yeah.
Dan, thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you.
Having a chat with me, talking about your life, music, and of course, beautiful craft beers. I'm stoked for that new Zayo record, which will come out as soon as it can. And I'm sure everyone else is listening as well. Cheers, Dan.
Cheers, sir.
Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. What a great chat. I had such a great time with Dan. What a great craft beer friend. I know that we are going to sit down and share craft beer together right after the apocalypse is finished. I am super, super looking forward to that. I'm also super looking forward to that new Zayo record, which they're waiting to release. You should absolutely hit them up and tell them to drop it because you guys are super stoked to hear it as well. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely go and subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. But not only that, take the time to rate it and write a review, because if you do that, more people just like yourself will discover the Vox and Hops podcast. Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have two more episodes dropping this week. That's right. This coming Thursday, I have the very special live Thirsty Thursday interview, which I conducted last week with Andrew Garrity. This is the third time that Andrew Garrity has been on Vox and Hops, and if you've listened to any of his previous episodes, you know that he is always a riot. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.